Deutschlandfunk. Sport am Sonntag.
Is the money and the power still on the side of the cheaters from your point of view?
Yeah, listen, I'm not sure it was, I agree with the assumption that it was on the side of the cheaters. I think you saw certain situations, Nike Oregon Project being one of those, where, you know, there was a determination to win at all costs, and really spare no expense or no length to go to in order to be the best. And it's why our investigation revealed, you know, a culture that really took advantage of athletes, put athletes in an untenable situation, ultimately 4-year sanctions for both the coach and the doctor. And as you mentioned, they closed that project. So I think it, you know, where situations like that do exist, having a system in place and investigators like we did to uncover those, expose those, sanction those, sends an incredibly strong deterrent message that that sort of behavior is not going to be tolerated in sport. And I think that keeps the majority, the overwhelming majority of people who want to do it the right way. Of course, we want to win, but we want to win the right way, keeps them on the side of clean athletes.
And is it from the point of view of an anti-doping agency, do you sometimes feel like the small fighter who gets to get there, you know, you've had your success then, but is it like you're fighting against a big world or an alliance of winners who can take the profit?
You know, I think one reporter described our effort in the Nike Oregon Project as sort of the David versus Goliath. And, you know, I didn't characterize it that way. Certainly our effort to penetrate the fort of Nike, where they, you know, raised the drawbridge, they put alligators and fire in the moat, and they put sharpshooters on the towers. It was an extremely difficult and complex investigation and effort, and really they went to great lengths to ensure the truth wasn't exposed. But, you know, that said, I've always believed the truth is much easier to expose than it is to keep quiet. And, you know, we asked the right questions, we followed our procedures, and at the end of the day, as you indicated, the project closed down. 4-year sanctions were given. That ultimately led to a lifetime ban on Salazar for, you know, violations of the safe sport rules.
The trainer head coach, the Alberto Salazar. Yes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So he's now under a lifetime suspension for other, you know, misbehavior within sport that ultimately arose out of and was a cascading effect of our investigation. So, you know, at the end of the day, the truth prevailed, and that's what we're satisfied with. And that hopefully gives athletes, but also others, a lot of comfort out there that we're going to pursue the truth no matter what the obstacles are. And ultimately, we firmly believe the truth will prevail.
Let's have a little closer look at athletics in specific. They are a high-risk sport in terms of doping likelihood. After the big corruption and cover-up scandal in world athletics that was uncovered in 2015, a so-called athletics integrity unit was founded a couple years later as an independent unit to also handle the anti-doping efforts. It gets $8 million per annum, as I understand, from world athletics. Is this a significant change you were hoping for?
Yeah, listen, I think it's a game changer. In fact, if you remember back to 2015, when the corruption was first exposed, actually, by the media there, in part in Germany in a big way, we called for an independent unit, or at the time we called it a GATA, a global anti-doping agency that works closely with NATO's to oversee all of sport. But track and field did it at the time. It arose out of that scandal. And congratulations to the current leadership, Sebastian Coe, who was being elected at that time, took, I think, a courageous step, because it's hard for sport leaders who otherwise want to control the brand and control the sport to give it up and put it in the hands of an independent organization. You know, the United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee did that, which led to our existence back in 2000. And we firmly believe that was a game-changing move. And really, athletics at this point is a model for other sports. We have a wonderfully close relationship with them. You may know we did the testing and partnership with them at the World Championships.
Yes.
And I think it's a game-changing opportunity to have independent organizations at the international level cooperating with independent NATOs, and gives new hope to clean athletes. And they're the real deal at this point. I can assure you, having, you know, just spent our teams 2 weeks together in the trenches working on anti-doping. I think we did 600 pre-comp tests, about 500 tests during the event, target tests, real time ability to target test. So I think it's a wonderful example of how it can work the right way.
Well, but isn't it also a little bit frustrating to see $8 million go into, I think one of the reports from 2020 said 5,000 test samples in a year and only, well, you could say a handful of findings that can be sanctioned. I mean, isn't that somewhat frustrating for an anti-doping investigator?
You know, I think you have to, one, look at the deterrent effect, right? If you suddenly took the testing away, it would be an absolute free-for-all. No athlete would be able to compete without having to dope. And it's why you have the risk of being caught there. And most athletes, you know, no young athlete, when they're 10, 12, 13 years old, wanting to be the best, dreaming of being on the Olympic or the, you know, World Athletics Championship podium, winning a gold medal, says, oh, I can't wait to become a professional athlete at that level so I can inject myself with dangerous drugs. Athletes don't want to cheat. Athletes know that cheaters never win and winners never cheat. So that testing provides an incredible deterrent, meaning they're not going to make the decision to cheat. They're actually going to make the decision, and it's reinforced by the fact that they could get caught and exposed not to cheat. And so I don't think you can look at, you know, those statistics alone and make decisions about the culture of the sport. I will say their investigative unit is highly effective. We've worked very closely. You can look at the Blessing case, which was a wonderful example under our Rodchenkov Act, where evidence came to us. We immediately partnered with them.
Blessing Okagawa. Yes, Nigerian athlete. Yeah. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, that's exactly right. She was pulled off the track in Tokyo, prevented from competing, received a 10 and then a 12-year sanction. Her team was disqualified, didn't make it to the World Championships because of her cheating. The quasi, you know, pseudo doctor who was providing her the drugs has been charged criminally now in the United States. There's been an additional athlete, Sabina Allen. There's another athlete who's going through the process in Switzerland right now. So it's a wonderful example, I think, of where the testing, you know, did what it did, but the investigative side really uncovered this highly intentional cheating situation.
Well, but can I interrupt here? Aren't there studies of a much higher prevalence in athletics that just really, you know, has a lot higher number of possible doping prevalence in that sport?
You know, I don't think so. I mean, you can go back. There was some, you know, papers out on surveys from, I think it was 2011, which was an entirely different ball game, right? That was when the IAAF at the time handled the anti-doping itself. And we know the cover-ups and the corruption that took place during that time period. So there hasn't been, you know, well-done research demonstrating that the prevalence is higher than that whatsoever at this point, that I'm aware of, at least. And this is something we focus on at our office, and certainly our statistics don't indicate that whatsoever.
That's interesting. And you already mentioned the Rodchenkov Act. That's a new law in the U.S. That makes it possible for U.S. investigators to target any sport event that is loosely connected to the U.S. To put it in a nutshell, the IRS and the FBI can investigate. They have a lot more resources, of course, because they're bigger places than an anti-doping agency. Would you say, all in all, that the page is slowly turning to more leverage in the fight against doping?
Yeah, I honestly do. I mean, I think it's, you have to look at the system that's in place, and does it give clean athletes a chance to win clean and an opportunity to do so? And I think absolutely it does. Similarly, I think any athlete in our system, when it's, you know, fully implemented with the will and the determination to protect clean athletes, any athlete in that system that's attempting to cheat is going to get caught and exposed. And I think you're a fool if you're, you know, attempting, whether global track and field these days or other programs run by the German NADA or us here in the United States that are running good programs, you're a fool to attempt to cheat these systems.
Last question. When would you call athletics world championships a success in the US when there were a lot of analytical findings in samples or when there weren't?
You know, I think I want every athlete to win and have an opportunity to win clean. You know, the system has to do the testing, has to do the investigation. Certainly what happens prior to any major event is what's critically important. And what people can take comfort in is knowing that the AIU and us and other national anti-doping organizations around the world coming into these championships have done a robust job, and during the championships have done a robust job. And I think you can actually now believe, you know, what you see is real.